Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am your host, Coach Rob, and I have got a great show for you this week. It's been a little while since the last podcast that I did here. In fact, it's been around 3.5, almost 4 weeks or so. And the reason for that is it's been a really, really hectic, busy few weeks there. And we're going to get to all that in my comments here in just a second. But I want to welcome all of you to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. And I want to thank my sponsors. I want to thank Road ID. Road ID speaks for you when you are unable to. So if for some poor godforsaken reason you're out on a training ride or the worst happens while you're out there, at least with a Road ID on your wrist, you can actually get some information to those who are taking care of you, and hopefully they'll get a hold of your friends and family, and at least they'll have some kind of contact information. I know I don't carry my wallet when I ride, and I know many people don't. So Road ID, cheap insurance for at least having some kind of identification on you. I want to thank the Sufferfest, Dave McQuellen over there at the Sufferfest. Really awesome workout videos. I use them regularly during my build periods. And you would think I'm a coach. I'm not trying to, you would think I'm a coach. I am trying to sell training plans, and that's true. I am trying to sell training plans. However, these things are just awesome. They work really, really well. They're really well designed, and the footage is excellent. And any of you who have been on a indoor trainer know indoor trainers suck, and at least having something to watch is much, much, much more entertaining. It makes the time pass faster. And if you're suffering like a dog in the middle of it, it's even better yet. So check them out. They're really awesome videos, and they're very reasonably priced as well. My other sponsors here, US Wellness Meats, hormone-free, free-range organic natural meats for building muscle and keeping your body well-balanced. Head on over and check them out. Bulletproof Exec, they've got a whole bunch of stuff over there to help you sleep better, help you work out better, and basically just help your body work a little bit more efficiently. And of course, Coach Rob's recommended Amazon purchases, stuff through the Amazon store that I've found is very useful, that I either use or I highly endorse. And you can find all of this stuff on the website, tailwind-coaching.com, along with the episode show notes and all kinds of other interesting coaching tidbits. Tailwind-coaching.com, that'll take you over there. You can click on the sponsors link in the upper right-hand side of the menu, the drop-down menu, and if you click through, they throw me a few dinars for hosting costs and bandwidth costs. As I've mentioned many, many times, the Tailwind Coaching Podcast is not a subscription-based podcast. It's free to all because, I'll be honest, I like watching people ride their bikes and have a great time doing it. So that's a big important thing to me. And getting this out there and getting it free for everybody is really excellent. As I mentioned, visit the site, tailwind-coaching. Contact me if you like. On the upper right-hand corner of the website, there is a pane for all kinds of ways to contact and or follow me. But for Gmail, coachrobdc@gmail.com or the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page are two of the fastest ways to get a hold of me. And as I just said, this podcast is free, and I like to get this information out to people. So do me a favor, head on over to iTunes. If you're not on iTunes already, give the podcast a 5-star rating. The more ratings I have, the higher the ratings, the faster it climbs up the charts, the more people get to see it, and the more people get to go out there and kick ass. And people kicking ass is really cool. So go ahead on over there, rate the Tailwind Coaching Podcast on iTunes for me. Really appreciate it. Leave a review if you like. Really appreciate those too. For you loyal listeners, you'll remember this, entering podcast 10, that's podcast 10 on the Tailwind Coaching store, the training plans page, that'll knock 10% off of any of the training plans out there. And make sure you take advantage of that, especially when Battenkill is coming up. Yes, that's right. As I'm recording this, it is Thursday, Thursday, November 6th. There are 9 days left until Battenkill registration opens, and I have been working diligently on revising and refining Battenkill, my Battenkill training plan. That Battenkill training plan took one of my athletes to a second place last year and a couple of other athletes to top 10s in their fields last year. All right, it's no joke, folks. This stuff actually works, and this stuff works really well. Last year alone, the average increase in people's functional threshold power was about 21%. All right, that's pretty significant. 21%, think about that. For those of you who are not power junkies, the average increase in ass kicking was 21%, so keep that in mind. So watch for that Battenkill plan. I'm hoping to release that around the 15th, so keep an eye on that. I know there's a few of you who've emailed me looking for that already, and it's going to be different than last year's plan. In fact, it's going to be different to the point where there's going to be, I'm going to include my forthcoming 20-minute workout, which is going to be part of my strength training module, which will be coming out hopefully within the next month or two. And I'm also going to modify some of the interval work. I'm going to add a few different interval work sequences, a couple of different workouts to help to fit this new Battenkill profile a little better, especially with the kind of finish that they're looking at having this year. So keep a good eye out for that. And of course, you can use podcast 10 at checkout to take 10% off that as well. Remember, folks, it's the start of the, quote, not-so-off season that I spoke about last year in one of my podcasts. I'll link that in the show notes. And it's time to start building your fitness. As I said, my strength training module should be coming out in the next month or so. So keep a lookout for that. As again, Battenkill will be coming out soon, so keep a lookout for that. And of course, those of you who are using my training plan support, those of you using my training plan support have been doing really, really awesome. You're kicking ass, and really, really happy to be working with you guys. That training plan support is excellent for those modular training plans, helping move things around, asking questions, and setting up goals and dates and things like that. Essentially, the training plan support is access to me and my coaching knowledge without me writing out training plans, which is the majority of time it takes when I'm coaching somebody. So keep that in mind. It's a lot cheaper option, and it works fantastically well if all the feedback I've gotten so far is correct. And I do have one one-on-one coaching slot available. Uno, eins, only one, un. One slot available. So if you're looking for information on that or you're looking for a consult, email me, coachrobdc@gmail.com, and we will get you squared away there. Okay. All of that stuff is taken care of. Let's get into the good stuff. The good stuff. Today, we're talking about effective off-season training and or effective not-so-off-season training, as it would be. Again, go back and listen to that podcast if you want to talk about why we shouldn't really be taking much of an off season. But I digress. We'll cover that, or you can read that or listen to it in your own time. But we're going to get into a couple things here, and we're going to do it right after a real quick break here. All right. Effective off-season training. Off-season training is a very interesting creature. Because off-season training, and I'm just going to refer to it as off-season, even though I technically would say it's the not-so-off-season. But off-season training is a very interesting creature. Right now it's November, and the concept or the idea of, geez, I got to start training for something is a little bit bizarre. Much of the population is doing cyclocross, so you're still in racing form right now. If you're not doing cyclocross, chances are you're sitting on your butt getting fat a little bit. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but maybe we could be using that time a little more effectively in order to really, really ramp ourselves up for the coming season. Whether it's racing, whether it's Grand Fondos, whether it's group rides, doesn't matter. Maybe we should be using that time a little bit more efficiently in order to get prepped to kick ass next season. And kicking ass is what we're all here for, right? Everybody say yes. Yes. Good. Okay. Let's start out with a concept that was actually coined sort of by Joe Friel in the Cyclist Training Bible. And that's the sort of the concept of Friel's triangle is what I call it. And I will put a image. It's probably going to be actually the header image of this this post on the website on tailwind-coaching.com. But Friel's triangle is kind of an interesting creature. It's a it's obviously a triangle, but at the corner of each point, or at each point of that triangle, this equilateral triangle, think of it that way. For those of you who are not math people, just think of a nice standard triangle, okay? No oblong, weird shapes. Equilateral triangle, at each corner you have what he considers the basic components of cycling fitness, all right? And the legs that extend between each one of those basic components are the advanced components of cycling fitness, all right? Now, it's very, very interesting to think about here, because, how do I put this kindly? It's almost like the triangle is, I don't want to say it's wrong, because it's not wrong. It's essentially correct, at least the way I view things. At least the way I view things, it's essentially correct. However, it's a little bit misrepresented, let's put it that way. Looking at Friel's triangle, Friel has muscular force, aerobic endurance, and speed skills as the corner points of the triangle. However, the base of the triangle as he has it are muscular force and speed skills, all right, which basically means that the base, if you're looking at the triangle like a pyramid, like a flat two-dimensional pyramid, the base of that pyramid is sprint power, and I can't disagree with that more. I absolutely can't disagree with that more. If you're following along here, if you're not following along here, let me paint this picture. On the bottom left, you have muscular force. On the bottom right, you have speed skills. And on the top, you have aerobic endurance, sort of the peak of the pyramid. In between the bottom left and the bottom right, in between muscular force and speed, you have sprint power. The right side, in between speed skill and aerobic endurance, you have anaerobic endurance. And the left side, in between aerobic endurance and muscular force, you have muscular endurance. So keep that in mind now. If you're following along on the website, great, that makes it a lot easier. Essentially, what I find with Friel's triangle is that it needs to be rotated about 120 degrees counterclockwise. So what does that do when we rotate that triangle? Well, we rotate that pyramid, and it puts aerobic endurance and muscular force at the bottom corners. And that means muscular endurance is your base of your pyramid. And I've said it so many times before, that it should go without saying. Muscular endurance is the basic unit of every single training plan that most people are lacking in. I find it time and time and time again. And muscular endurance is basically, as I'll describe again, the ability for your body to produce force for a long period of time. So if you combine the body's ability to produce muscular force for a long period of time, aerobically, you end up with muscular endurance. How many times have you or somebody you know gone out on a ride that is probably a little bit advanced for you? A little bit longer than you're used to at some point in the season, or a little bit harder than you're used to at some point in the season? How many of you have done that? I'm assuming everybody is nodding their head right now. Everybody listening to this has been on one of those rides where they're just like, oh man, I'm getting my butt kicked here. And how many times have you or somebody who's been in that situation cramped on one of those rides? I'm guessing a lot of people are now nodding their head once again. And how many times has stretching that leg or that calf or that hamstring or that quad made that cramp sort of go away, feel a little bit better? Probably a lot of you are, again, nodding your head. Now, how many people are out there saying that, well, I should have taken more electrolytes when their right leg is cramping, for example? I know there's a bunch of you who are shaking your head. All I can say is, nope. If you're taking electrolytes for cramping, you better be cramping all over your entire body, your arms, your hands, your feet, your toes, your legs, your abs, your neck, all right? A electrolyte-based cramp is something that will affect your entire body, not just one muscle or one limb. If you're experienced, you've ever experienced something like that, that is a cramp as a result of overrunning your body's muscular endurance capability or capacity. All right. Muscular endurance is what prevents your body from cramping. It's what allows you to spend all that time under tension, all that time just beating up on your body, and helps keep it moving. All right. So essentially, that's why I'm telling you your base needs to be muscular endurance. A lot of your work needs to be muscular endurance in nature. How do you make a smart off-season training plan or program that helps that and helps you build from the base of that pyramid all the way up? Well, I'm going to break it down for you piece at a time, and I'm going to start with the aerobic endurance part of it, which sounds odd, but the aerobic endurance portion of the triangle. So now we're talking about the bottom left of the triangle. All right. So I'm going to piece this together here for you. Bottom left will be aerobic endurance. The bottom right will be muscular force. The peak of the pyramid will be speed skills. All right. The very base will be muscular endurance, in between aerobic endurance and muscular force. The right side, sprint power, and the left side is anaerobic endurance. All right. So we've taken Friel's triad or Friel's pyramid or his triangle, and we've rotated it 120 degrees counterclockwise. All right. Aerobic endurance. Aerobic endurance is, in the off season, is your cross training. it is your long intervals on the bike, your long zone two, really zone two power, zone two heart rate, perceived exertion. Basically, you could go all day at this. This is your cafe ride pace, essentially. All right. So, how do you build this in the off season? Well, I'm going to be honest with you. Cross training is a great way to do it. Cross training, if you remember, or if you've read my article on biohacking your energy systems, or if you listened to a couple of my podcasts, particularly the Strength Training 1 podcast, there are a whole number of different systems which help our body build energy and build aerobic fitness. you can train them by using the long, slow distance, calcium calmodulin pathway. You can train them by using interval training, which is the, slips my mind right now. It's on the tip of my tongue too. Anyway, long, yeah. AMPK pathway. That's exactly what, get the freaking letters right. Anyway, calcium calmodulin, your long, slow distance rides. AMPK being your interval training rides or your cross training interval work. That's high intensity interval work. And I'll be honest with you, your long-term fitness. How many years have you been riding a bike? If you're just picking up a bike this year and you're expecting to go out and race, I'm going to be honest with you, your aerobic endurance is going to be lacking. People who are less than 3 years in the sport of cycling tend to be considered beginners still in my eyes. And the reason why is that long-term fitness is there's aerobic enzyme changes, there's some improvement in the TCA cycle efficiency, the citric acid cycle efficiency, There's improvement in the electron transport system efficiency. your body goes through basic changes, which enhance its aerobic efficiency, its ability to deliver oxygen to muscles, capillary density increases. All that stuff is long-term aerobic adaptation. And I'll be honest with you, you're going to get most of that, like I said, by just riding a lot and riding for a long time. And a long time meaning years. But there's always room to improve it at the beginning of the season. You can always add a few more capillaries. You can always improve citric acid or electron transport efficiency. You can always build aerobic enzyme pathways. So your cross-training and your slow zone 2 work during the off-season are going to be key to improving that aerobic endurance. All right, so aerobic endurance down the tubes. We've got the bottom left corner of our pyramid already built. Let's move on to the bottom right corner, the muscular force portion of this. And as you may have listened to my previous podcasts on strength training can build aerobic efficiency through high-intensity interval training. It can also build muscular strength or force, muscular force production through the MTORC1, mTORC pathway, which is basically activated by lifting heavy things and putting them back down and repeating a bunch of times. muscular force, this, folks, is why this portion of the pyramid is why you find cyclists in the gym. This is exactly why you find cyclists in the gym. All right. You need to be able to produce force on a muscle fiber or motor unit level in order to put it to the bike. Folks, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. The idea of people saying that, well, strength training doesn't help you on the bike is flat out bullshit. It has to help you on the bike. Now, follow me why. We talked about this last time in the Strength Training for Cyclists podcast, but I'm going to go over this. Power is work times time, right? If you increase the capacity for doing work during the pedal stroke, you increase your power. Conversely, if you increase the number of pedal strokes, you increase your power as well for the same time, for the same duration. So the people who are telling you that gym work, which allows you to push harder, not helping you on the bike, are kind of dummies. Okay, I'm going to put it very, very bluntly there. So gym workouts will improve your muscular force production capacity. All right. And you need that force capacity in order to have muscular endurance, right? I mean, all the endurance in the world is great. If you can't push the pedals with any kind of force, how far are you going to get? How much power are you going to produce? Now, keep in mind, power is not the same as sprint power on the triangle. Power is simply a generic amount of output at this point. All right. So that's what I'm referring to. When I refer to sprint power, we'll talk about that specifically. How do we go about this? Well, I talked about things in the gym. Like I said, my new Bat and Kill program coming up. We'll have my 20-minute high-intensity strength workout. But my strength training module will have a lot of heavy lifting workouts, which are designed to boost things like human growth hormone, testosterone, build myonuclei, create muscle hypertrophy, things like that. These are all things which lead to an increase in contractile force for each muscle. All right, you're going to be in the gym. You're going to be doing things like deadlifts. You're going to be doing things like sumo deadlifts and squats, full body, you know, full ass to grass kind of squats. You're going to be doing leg presses, hip extensions, things like that. Basically, you're doing things that will use entire chains of muscles. I'm not a big fan of Nautilus. I'm not a big fan of machines. I really don't like isolation machines, and I'll explain why. Because when you isolate a muscle and you make it stronger, you're not creating functional strength. And functional strength is the ability for that muscle to work in synergy with those muscles around it to produce motion in your body. All right. That's why I love free weights and I love body weight stuff, because it creates and basically facilitates excessive amounts of functional muscular strength. All right. A deadlift, if you look at the muscle activation patterns of a deadlift that is performed properly, and I do mean performed properly with the correct form, not a half-assed deadlift. You do a properly executed deadlift with proper form, the muscles required to perform a deadlift, folks, they're essentially the same muscles that you're using to push the pedals each time you push the pedals. There's an activation of the glute, there's an activation of the hamstring, there's some activation in your lumbar spinal erector muscles and QL muscles, which stabilize. There's active stabilization in the core, there's activity in the calf, there's activity in the quad, there's some activity in your hip flexor to stabilize the lumbar spine. Folks, a deadlift essentially mimics your pedal stroke with a heavier weight. All right. I know Andy Pruitt is out there saying if cyclists are going to do strength training, they have to use body weight plus 20 pounds because that's what their bike weighs. Bullshit. Go find yourself some of the best Olympic track racers in the country. Go find them. Ask them what their gym routines are. All right. I know some of their gym routines and they're meatheads basically in the gym. They are heavy lifting. Guys, these folks are doing 400 pounds on the squat rack with chains. For those of you who are not familiar with gym workouts, chains basically add more resistance the further you get them off of the floor, all right? Because more of that chain is being lifted up. So increased resistance towards the top of your lift, decreased resistance near the bottom of the lift on a squat, for example. All right, these guys are freaking heavy lifting, all right? And they're monsters. Absolute monsters. Now, am I telling you to go out and lift 400 pounds? Hell no. Most of us are never going to do that. All right. But you go out and you start doing 80% of one rep max lifts. I guarantee you, you're going to get on the bike and you're going to be stronger. You want a good example? I use myself as a guinea pig for every single one of my training plans. I have been using my strength and conditioning training plan, my strength and conditioning modular plan, for the last 6 weeks or so. In the last 6 weeks of doing almost no riding, maybe 3, 4, maybe 5 rides in that time, I have added approximately 15% more power to my sprint just by being in the gym. 15%, folks. That's like an extra 150 watts of 5-second power. Now, tell me that working out in the gym doesn't do anything for you. Granted, I am N equals one, but this stuff works. Physiologically, it works. Biochemically, it works. If it's done right and periodized correctly, it works. So that's why muscular force is so important, and that's why gym work in the off-season leads to effective off-season training. All right? Now, on the bike, muscular force, you can do specific pedaling drills to create those same kind of conditions. In fact, you need to do specific pedaling drills to basically transfer over the neuromuscular capacity to produce force to your pedal stroke, to that rounded pedal stroke. Okay, that's why my training plans have force work in them. Very high pedal tensions, very low cadences. Okay, to really try and mimic that deadlift or squat kind of movement and integrate it into a pedal stroke onto a bike where instead of straight up and down, it's a circular pattern. All right, so very specific on bike work on the trainer, on rollers, and outside. Outdoors is extremely easy to do force work, folks. Just slam it into a really hard gear, stay seated, and let your pedals turn at about 60 RPM, all right? You want to know more specifics of that? Shoot me an email, hook up with some training plans, something like that. That'll give you all the information. I'm giving you the basic idea here so you can maybe consider adding some of this to your training plans, all right? So we've dealt with the bottom two corners of the pyramid. We've dealt with the aerobic endurance and the muscular force. We're going to deal with building the base now, building the base of our fitness for the year to come, and that's building our muscular endurance, okay? The muscular endurance portion of this obviously has to do with the combination of endurance, the ability for your body to take oxygen out of your lungs, send it to the muscles so that they can work, and muscular force, the ability to contract, to produce force, to push on those pedals, all right? Now, the ability to do that for a long period of time, obviously, muscular endurance, a lot of ME, muscular endurance. I've been harping about it for years that this is one of the most important things that people are lacking, all right? Now, building muscular endurance is pretty easy, really pretty easy. On the trainer, specific intervals on the trainer of 10, 15, 20, even 30 minutes of muscular endurance, lower pedal revolutions, higher pedal tension, that's how you build muscular endurance. Your body has to learn how to resist fatigue at those high loads, all right? Those of you who are in the gym, who are going and lifting, okay, you can do specific gym workouts for this. Okay, specific gym workouts are lifting workouts that tax your endurance, your ability to continue to lift. Granted, you're not going to be doing like 80, 90% of one rep max lifts for endurance work, but you might be doing 60% of one rep max, and you might be lifting instead of three to five reps, you might be doing 10, 15, 20, 30 reps. All right, teaching your body how to resist fatigue. Essentially, you're becoming more efficient. Essentially becoming more efficient and more fatigue resistant. And that is the key to your off-season training. That's what you are trying to build in your off-season training. All right. I will touch on the rest of those, rest of the parts of it, only because one piece of it is also your base period work. But essentially, what your goal in your off-season now is to be prepared and ready and building your muscular endurance base. Because once your body can resist fatigue, can resist cramping, can put out big, big, big amounts of force, and continually do it over the course of an hour and a half, two, three, four, five, even out to 8, 9 hours, anything you have to add on top of that can easily be layered on. If you lack the basic muscular endurance, the basic fatigue resistance to go out and ride for 5 to 6 hours, if your main goal event is a, say it's a 4-hour century, and you don't have the muscular endurance to ride beyond, what, an hour and a half race, the chances of you going out and maintaining 25 miles an hour plus, unless it's dead pancake flat, it's slim to none. I can almost guarantee you, once you hit the point where you have exceeded your muscular endurance capacity, you will start to fall apart. You will break down. Your body will fail. All right? It's like putting money into the bank. You put money into a savings account to be able to draw it out later, and then you put more money in so that you can draw some out later. What happens if you overdraft your bank account? People start charging you interest, right? They start charging you fees. It's $29 here or whatever. I don't think Bank of America charges like $45 or something like this now. You overdraft, they charge you, all right? You have to pay that back at some point. You're going to pay that back in cramps, muscle soreness, delayed onset muscle soreness, or injury. Folks, that is why muscular endurance is so damn important in your off season. And that's why your effective off-season training must include muscular endurance training. Absolutely has to, without a doubt, no questions asked. All right, with muscular endurance, muscular force, and aerobic endurance covered, I'm going to take a real quick break here. I'm going to collect the rest of my notes, and we're going to go over how we build up the pyramid, build the walls, and add more bang for your buck in the off season. All right. We just covered the base of our pyramid, the base of our off season fitness, and what makes an effective off season training program. The base of that fitness, of course, is the aerobic endurance that we've built over years of riding, or just riding, if you're less than a few years in. The muscular force that we've developed through specific pedaling drills and or through our work in the gym. And of course, the muscular endurance that results of marrying those two together. Now we have to talk about something else, and this is this is what lets us build up the pyramid instead of building just a larger base, all right? If you're remembering our Friel's triad that we turned on its side, the top of that pyramid is what's considered his speed skill, okay? Friel basically considers speed skills as sessions that are needed to, quote, improve efficiency by improving movement skills. Usually involves doing drills to refine or learn a technique. Common in swimming, cycling, etc. Typical drill is to increase pedaling cadence and low gear to max level for a few seconds or a few minutes while relaxing the body. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stride workouts, etc., etc. Okay, fine. Essentially what these intervals are, when you strip down all the fancy discussion and the fancy talk, speed skills are essentially neuromuscular skills, all right? The ability for your brain to tell your body what to do, all right? A pedal stroke, a round pedal stroke, is essentially really, really odd for the human body. It's not a normal fluid motion. That's why when you see people who are new level riders, you can look at them and go, man, that guy must not have been riding very long because he's kind of herky-jerky. By the way, that's one of my favorite phrases, the herky-jerky. So keep that in mind. Okay. Next time you see somebody out there, I hope you think about herky-jerky if you see them looking all gangly and stuff. the other hallmark of most, I don't want to say younger riders because it's not necessarily the case, but less experienced riders is the fact that they tend to choose lower cadences, much lower cadences. I'm talking cadences in the 40s to 60s or so. Now, there are certain professionals who have had lower cadences in the past. Der Kaiser, Jan Ulrich, seems to come to mind as a lower cadence guy. However, that's sort of atypical. That's really not the norm. Speed skills are essentially being able to contract specific muscles in specific sequences in order to be very, very efficient, to not waste energy contracting a muscle at the improper time, okay? These skills are, let's face it, folks, these skills are basically impossible to develop off the bike. And the reason why is because you don't pedal circles in everyday life. Even if you're walking down the hall at work, you're not pedaling a circle. You're essentially walking. If you follow the human gait pattern, the human gait pattern tends to be a very elliptical kind of pattern. Follow your foot. It's a very flat ellipsoid or ovaloid pattern. It's not a perfect circle like a pedal stroke is. Refining a pedal stroke takes a lot of work and a long, long, long time. But you can make it a little bit better by doing specific drills, which will help to reinforce neuromuscular patterns that you built over the years doing your aerobic work. These neuromuscular patterns are also very necessary to take that muscular force and turn it into forward motion through the pedals, okay? These drills are basically done well, much, much more efficiently on a set of rollers. Rollers will bring out any dead spot or weakness in your pedal stroke. Watch somebody who spends a lot of time riding on the rollers and you will see a buttery smooth pedal stroke, okay? You watch somebody who can stand up on rollers or who can do one-legged drills on rollers and you're going to be watching someone whose pedal stroke is masterful, all right? Rollers are incredibly hard to ride. I will not lie to you, but they will up your game magnificently if you would make the investment in them. So doing speed skill work, so doing high cadence work, doing spin-ups, doing one-legged drills, doing things like that on rollers will help to build those neuromuscular pathways, help to get those muscles firing smoothly and in a proper, efficient pattern so that you can have a nice, smooth pedal stroke. Once that efficiency is built, that is the key to adding two more sides of your pyramid, all right? So on the bike, I don't really prefer these intervals on the trainer, but if you have a trainer and that's all you got, you have no choice. Out on the road, you can do these as well. In fact, they're very easily done out on the road. Doing one-legged drills on the road will expose a dead spot in your pedal stroke almost as fast as doing them on the rollers, folks. And that is absolutely no lie. I've done one-legged work outside. I've done one-legged work on the rollers. It's a huge, huge ask, but it pays dividends. I can tell you that, honestly. I've coached a number of people who have never done speed or cadence work, and it's been a huge eye-opening change for them. So keep that in mind and add those speed drills, add those one-legged drills, those spin-ups and things like that to your repertoire, as it were. So now we've covered the 3 points of the triangle. We've covered the aerobic endurance and muscular force, which are at the bottom. We've built that muscular endurance base, and we've basically figured out that the peak of our pyramid is going to be our speed skills, our neuromuscular efficiency, essentially. That allows us to build the two sides of our pyramid. And I'm going to go with, essentially, I'm going to work up the Kogan zones. I'm going to work up from zone 5 up to zone 7. We're going to start with the left side of our pyramid. If you remember, aerobic endurance on the bottom left, muscular force on the bottom right, speed skill on the top, muscular endurance on the very bottom. The left side of our pyramid is going to be anaerobic endurance. Anaerobic endurance is an interesting one, folks. Anaerobic endurance is that VO2 max zone, that zone 5 level work, okay? Born from the ability for our aerobic system to develop and deliver a certain amount of oxygen to our body, and our ability for our body to be as efficient as possible, we can take ourselves above that functional threshold power, that lactate threshold, and that's where we find that aerobic endurance, or anaerobic endurance, excuse me. That's where we find our zone 5, all right? These workouts, once again, can be on the bike, which I highly recommend, because not only do you build neuromuscular coordination with these kind of workouts, but you also build and raise aerobic endurance through this super maximal or super threshold training. But zone 5 work is best done on the bike, because it's a lot harder to do it off the bike. To do VO2 max style work off the bike, you have to be doing like running intervals, sprint work intervals, things like that. And trust me, those things are absolutely no fun. In the gym, you may be doing things like really fast Metcon circuits, kettlebell work, stuff like that. Again, I prefer doing it on the bike. VO2 max work on the bike can be done either on the rollers or on a trainer. Your choice. Depends what you want to work on. If you really want to work on just adding more and more and more anaerobic endurance, any more VO2 work, do them on the trainer. Don't worry about falling over if you're in an oxygen-deprived state and, you know, you run off the rollers and roll into the cat or something like that, okay? If you really want to refine your pedal stroke and that neuromuscular efficiency, do your VO2 max work on the rollers. All right, those of you who think that you can't get a good workout on the rollers are sadly mistaken. You can do some ridiculous work on the rollers. VO2 max work included, all right? So keep that in mind as well. So intervals like that are generally going to be anywhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5 minutes. If you're doing more than 8 minutes at a, quote, VO2 max or zone 5 level effort, you're not doing a true zone 5 or VO2 max workout, so just keep that in mind as well. But you're looking at about 3 to 5 minutes effort, and you're looking at a zone 5 level effort, obviously. One of my favorite workouts for building anaerobic endurance is the zone 5 repeat workout, which features in almost every single one of my training plans. Anything that has to do with raising VO2 max or raising zone 5 capacity, you're going to get zone 5 repeats in my plan. And they are horrendously effective both at raising your zone 5 level power, but also raising your threshold as well, so that your zone 5 gets higher and higher and higher. All right, anaerobic endurance out of the way. My favorite one coming up, and this just kills me that it's my favorite one, especially because I used to be a really, really gifted climber. And in order to race, I really killed a lot of that climbing prowess for this. And that's the right side of our pyramid, a combination of muscular force and speed skills, which gives us our sprint power. So sprint power is essentially the ability for our body to turn the pedals as fast as possible while putting out absolute maximum force. And I do mean maximum force. I mean you're putting out huge wattage. These are the guys in the Tour de France that are putting out like 15, 16, 1700 watts in their sprints, all right? That is sprint power. That is a combination of significant muscular force capacity, muscular force generation, along with ridiculous speed and efficiency skills, okay? Building sprint power is really a multi-faceted process, all right? There are tons and tons and tons of ways to build efficient sprint power, all right? And to build sprint power in an effective off-season way, once again, guys, we're going to the gym. Or you're going to get a hold of a few things from my Amazon store, like a kettlebell, like, a Bosu ball, things like that. Or you're going to find yourself a few things like a chair or stairs or things like that that you don't even have to pay for. All right. But kettlebell is one of my favorites for this. And like I said, you can go through my Amazon store and you can actually order yourself a kettlebell. If you do it Prime, you get it shipped free usually. So, and it's also a great way to just build muscular strength. You can do plenty of things with it. In fact, my 20-minute workout relies heavily on kettlebell, for those of you who are interested in that, which will probably be coming out. In fact, I may even just post my 20-minute workout as a bonus for everybody as a post. So keep an eye out for that in the next couple weeks. But I digress. Sprint power building in the gym. Plyometric work. Box jumps. All right. Being able to create that burst of force and essentially coordinated enough so that you can get your body off the ground a significant distance. Box jumps are great for that. Other plyometrics are great for that. Hops, stair runs, stair jumps, things like that are excellent for building power. I just stated kettlebell work is magnificent for building power, okay? Kettlebells are, if you do them properly, now you could, there are a whole bunch of different schools of thought on kettlebell work. I personally prefer to do my kettlebell swings. Now I know I'm getting a little bit deeper into this than I would have intended, but kettlebell swings for me tend to be with hip and knee flexion that mimics my pedal stroke. All right, mimics the hip and knee flexion that I possess while I'm riding a bike. So the ability to swing that kettlebell is closely tied to the same function, all right, the same posterior chain muscle contraction as pushing the pedals. All right, that glute, that hamstring, that lower back, that calf a little bit, that quad a little bit, stabilizing through your core and those hip flexors a little bit, okay? That is a key to building sprint power and sprint speed, is the ability to just be able to swing that kettlebell repeatedly. That's a great workout. That single-handed swings, double-handed swings, all kinds of, there's all kinds of things. And if you want to get even deeper into it, do a kettlebell workout that just swings until you drop. All right, if you want to add a little bit of anaerobic endurance to it, because you will go into the red zone with that, and if you want to add a little bit of muscular endurance to that, just do repeated kettlebell swings until you can't swing no more. All right, that'll also help you develop form in that hip extension sort of pattern. I wouldn't do that more than once every couple weeks, though, just speaking from experience. Trust me. On-bike work for sprinting, for developing sprint power, things like standing starts, standing from a track stand and winding up your heaviest gear to highest possible cadence you can before you basically poop out. That's going to be a great workout for you. Track starts, track sprints, things like that. Lifting off from a high pace already. So one of my favorite workouts, one of my favorite interval sets is find a couple of roads that have short short descents on them. And in short descents, I'm talking maybe 100 meters, 150 meters, just enough to get you up to the speed that you would be at in a Peloton, and then suddenly row through your gears as you jump out of the saddle and try to sprint and beat that speed, get higher than that speed. That's another great workout. All right, those are just like ramp up sprints, and those are fantastic for sprint power as well. You can do standing start work very easily on a trainer. I would not recommend attempting to sprint on the rollers, folks. It's probably not a good idea unless you're really, really, really experienced on the rollers. And I've watched it happen before. It's not a pretty sight, okay? Take my word for it. Once again, if you want to run over the cat or, you know, bump your head on the dining room table, I would advise sprinting out of the saddle on your rollers. Otherwise, don't do it. It's not very smart. So, that being said, we've covered all 3 points of our pyramid. We've also covered all 3 sides of our pyramid. Now, the only thing we have to cover is, for effective off-season, is essentially frequency and recovery. I'm not going to give away all my secrets, folks. That's just not the smartest thing to do. Again, I am a coach. I do sell coaching. I do sell training plans. And if you want in-depth work on this and an in-depth look, get a hold of me or purchase those training plans, folks. They're not expensive, and they also have a lot of good information in them. All right. Again, I'm going to plug my training plan support, which gives you access to my brain along with the modular plans or the training plans that you have purchased. So keep that in mind. Off-season training, effective off-season training, is essentially dependent upon correct modulation of effort as it relates to recovery. That being said, the off-season is not a time to burn yourself out, folks. It's not. It really isn't. That's why I advocate going to the gym. That's why I advocate lifting. That's why I advocate cross-training. Because it takes you mentally and physically away from the bike for a period of time. It challenges your body in different ways and allows your body to sort of adapt a little differently. The definition of insanity, and I believe it was Einstein that said this, the definition of insanity is doing the exact same thing over and over, expecting different results. How many of you out there have spent your off seasons sitting on the couch for like 2 months and then suddenly jumping back on the bike and doing your base work, whatever that might be, and then ramping up into your build period, whatever that might be, and then racing? How many of you done that every single year? How many of you made only minuscule gains each time? Maybe it's because you're off-season training is not effective. That might be the case. Maybe it's time to mix it up. Maybe it's time to confuse your body a little bit. Get in the gym. Start doing some lifting. All right? Start stressing your body in different ways. Start reducing your volume a little bit, increasing your intensity and forcing your body to recover a little bit differently. That's how you make use of your off-season. That's how you make your off-season effective. You prioritize the base of your pyramid. You prioritize your aerobic endurance, your muscular force, your muscular endurance. And you modulate that and you augment that with proper recovery, proper nutrition. And suddenly you take an off-season and you make it an effective off-season. And I will tell you, folks, from experience and from coaching athletes and from coaching people in general, whether it's in my practice, what you do now, 159,000% affects what happens to you in the future. So if you take the time and make yourself perform an effective off-season plan, you will kick ass in the season. I guarantee it. I've watched it happen countless times. This stuff works. That's all it has to be said. Keep that in mind. Folks, I want to thank you all for listening. I know this has been a little bit of a longer podcast, but I want to thank you for listening. I want you to keep the rubber side down, the shiny side up. I want you to get your butt in the gym, and I want you to start lifting. I want you to start making an effective off-season training plan for yourselves. And if you need help, I want you to get a hold of me so that I can help you do it. Because I want to see you guys kick ass. I want to see everybody have fun kicking ass. Until next time, folks, Coach Rob signing off. If you have questions for me, shoot me an email at coachrobdc@gmail.com or find me on the tailwind-coaching.com website. I will talk to you all right around the next podcast.